Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and man about town, Dr. Tony Weaver, former legendary radio health evangelist, but Rick has made fun of me so many times. I am no longer assuming that title. This is the Is It Hot on This Planet or Is It Just Me show. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio and a special radio wave to the MSU Ronald G. Eagling staff at the Space Science Center here at Morehead State University. I have in the studio two health experts to discuss pretty much everything that we'll be talking about today. First of all, from the University of Kentucky, assistant professor in the physician assistant program, Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And making his appearance in the low chair on the other side of the studio from the University of Kentucky, the executive director of networking and infrastructure, Rick Phillips, to talk about our web presence. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Tony, you know I'm really glad to be here.
We're glad you're here, too.
Yeah. Yeah. No inside story or anything.
No. There was a miscommunication, but we were just hoping that Rick maybe wouldn't show up, and he did anyway, and so take it away, Rick.
So, to get the audio of the show, WMKY.org, Morehead State Public Radio's website, find Health Matters, and there you will find a list of the most recent shows. There's a summary, little description of what the show was about, provided Tony's memory was okay. And there is a link to the audio. So if you want to verify that Tony's summary is correct, you just click on the little link and listen to the show, send it to your friends. Again, enjoy that audio. It's there for your listening pleasure. After you've listened to the show and you're ready to interact with the show, jump over to Facebook. Yep, we're old. We use Facebook. Facebook.com/HMRadioShow. That's a fan page devoted to Health Matters. When you leave feedback or a message or some type of a request for show content, you know what? You're probably going to get responded to by the actual Health Matters crew. So we ask you to certainly use that Facebook site. Let us know what you think, what you want, what you need to know. Pretty much anything. And throw in an occasional joke about Tony. We like that. It makes him feel important. Makes him feel legendary.
Absolutely.
And that can all be found at Facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor tonight, Sleeping Pills. Take sleeping pills tonight and sleep. Safe and restful sleep. 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 Do you remember that?
I'm out.
Okay.
Well, I think you've already put somebody to sleep here in the studio.
I think so. FDA April 30th added a boxed warning. This is their strongest warning to the insomnia drugs. This is the FDA acting commissioner, Ned Sharpless. He says, "We recognize that millions of Americans suffer from insomnia and rely on these drugs to help them sleep better at night. While incidents are rare, they are serious, and it's important that patients and healthcare professionals are aware of the risk. These incidents can occur after the first dose of sleep medicines or after a longer period of treatment and can occur in patients without any history of these behaviors, even at the lowest recommended doses." What are we talking about, these incidents? We are talking about injury and death resulting from sleepwalking, sleep driving, and engaging in other activities while not fully awake after taking these medicines. That is Lunesta, Sonata, Ambien, Ambien CR, Intermezzo. These are the ones that now have a boxed warning, according to the FDA. They will require the addition of a contraindication against using these drugs in patients who experience an episode after taking them. That is, if you did engage in texting or have sex or find yourself out on the sidewalk after taking one of these drugs with no knowledge of how you got there, then you should not take that drug or another drug. That is a contraindication. There were 66 cases the FDA reviewed. Patients engaged in activities not fully awake, such as sleepwalking, driving, that resulted in serious injuries or death after taking Lunesta, Sonata, and Ambien. 46 reports of non-fatal serious injuries, accidental overdoses, falls, burns, near drowning, exposure to extreme cold temperatures leading to loss of limb or near death, injuries such as gunshot wounds and apparent suicide attempts. 20 deaths from carbon monoxide poisoning, drowning, fatal falls, hypothermia, fatal motor vehicle crashes with the patient driving while apparently asleep, and apparent suicide. I have a file that I've kept since about 2004, 2005 of our Health Matters references and also the show scripts. And I went back, and I went back all the way to 2007. We have been talking about these drugs and talking about these drugs. Whatever they induce, it's not sleep. It is a altered level of consciousness. Some of my least favorite drugs in the arsenal, things that I'm embarrassed to prescribe, honestly, because the health benefits have never been shown. And as we can see, people die from these drugs. The sleeping medicines, and I'm speaking specifically Lunesta, Sonata, Ambien. Those are the ones that the FDA has now got the boxed warning. We'll talk more about some of the previous warnings. The FDA just keeps getting more and more serious about these medicines. We'll talk about that in our next fractional portion.
Didn't the box warning, though, include some of the over-the-counters?
I did not get all of the safety communication from the FDA. Those were the ones where we had the box warning required. I'm not sure about a box warning on over-the-counter because, you know, those are communications to physicians. So I can't really say for sure, Shelley. I will tell you, though, when you look at the over-the-counter ones, they're usually diphenhydramine, which is, it's just kind of a, it's an ugly sleep. You wake up, your mouth's real dry, you're a little bit buzzed the next morning. It is not in any way refreshing, but it, again, they do make you close your eyes and not remember what happens next. If that's your definition of sleep, then you are asleep. Now, the title of the show, is it hot on this planet or is it just me?
It's just you.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate that. I expected you to take that viewpoint.
A month ago, you were complaining about the snow. Make up your mind.
Well, I wasn't happy with the snow. No, I think...
Do you need to move to Southern California so that it's 73 all the time?
No, I need to move to Duluth.
Really?
Well,
actually, at this point, Shelley, I think we would agree.
No, you need to move to Duluth in like 50 years or something, 30 years.
Yeah, I've got it. That's been my long-term plans. This is, I'll just read this. This is the New York Times, driven by polls showing that voters in both parties, particularly younger Americans, increasingly concerned about a warming planet, and prodded by the new Democratic majority in the House, a growing number of Republicans are openly discussing climate change and proposing what they call conservative solutions. Whit Ayers, who is a Republican political consultant, said, denying the basic existence of climate change is no longer a credible political position. We at Health Matters heartily agree with that. If you wish to argue, that's fine. We're not going to pay any attention to you. We're going to talk some about what we can do about climate change and how to adapt to it. And the first thing, as we mentioned in the show a couple of weeks ago now, was Duluth and the Great Lakes are looking pretty good because they have a plentiful supply of water and their climate, in fact, is warming, even as we start playing host to a number of formerly tropical mosquitoes and bugs here in the southeast. With that in mind, we'll talk some in our first fractional portion. We got 5 minutes left about climate change and how it affects your health. And the first one just was, this is a stretch, but I just loved it. April 16th, this is WOWT-TV in Gretna, Nebraska. And we put this on the Facebook page because I love this. A 59-year-old man had a racing heart. He had an irregular heartbeat, a cardiac arrhythmia, with no previous history of heart problems. Now, the guy was apparently, he was not unconscious or anything like that. You can have an irregular heartbeat that is uncomfortable. I suspect it might have been, we call it a supraventricular tachycardia, where the heart is racing along as if you had exercised, but in fact you're sitting still. There was a 20-minute drive to the emergency room, as it often is in rural Nebraska and places like that. And at one point, the heart rate was going 200 beats a minute. So it's about three times normal. During the 7-mile ride to Lakeside Hospital, the ambulance hit a pothole. Boom.
Boom.
Hit a pothole. Medics told the hospital that the jolt of the pothole converted his heart to a normal rhythm.
That was some pothole, I'm thinking.
You sure they weren't in, like, Kentucky?
Well, and the physician expert, he says, well, one way to treat a rapid heartbeat is with an electrical shock, and you'll see that on TV, the paddles, the clear, the big jolt. But the other thing, and this used to be in the ACLS manuals, was to do what they call a precordial thump. And we don't usually do this when a patient is awake and alert, but if you lose your pulse, before we can get started on CPR or anything, but just basically they just hit you in the chest and see if we might be able to jolt the heart into its regular rhythm. Now, the reverse can happen as well, right? The classic case of the pitcher at a baseball game getting a line drive back to the mound. The ball hits the child or the pitcher in the chest, the young person in the chest, and induces an irregular rhythm, which can be life-threatening as well. So we know that those blows to the chest can do something, and in this case, they did something good. The Gretna Fire and Rescue Chiefs declined to talk about where the pothole was because apparently that would violate the patient's privacy. I mean, they hit, you could look around and you say, all right, who has to drive over this pothole? You can narrow it down. So they wouldn't do that. So if you're looking for the life-saving pothole, let's say you're in the Nebraska area when your heart starts racing and you're looking for that pothole, you're just going to have to make a guess.
So are they ever going to fill the pothole or now?
I mean, if a pothole, the headline, and this is why I read it, the headline says, giant pothole may have saved a man's life. And you think, well, I've got to read that story. I don't know what this means, but I got to find that. If a giant pothole had saved my life, I would try to resist efforts to fill it. I figure I would honor that pothole. I'd put some flowers beside it and make sure that it's never filled or something. I don't know, paint it.
Don't you think that pothole is going to just continue to get bigger and save more lives?
I like the way you think.
It might.
Life-saving pothole from Nebraska. And who wouldn't go? I mean, that's a miracle, right? I mean, we should put up some type of a, whatever the religion of your choice, shrine beside that pothole because it is a miraculous pothole.
At some point, it'll be able to fit in the pothole.
That's a good point. No, it's not. There was one documented case from the late 1970s in the medical literature where a patient's heart was jolted into a normal heart rhythm by a speed bump. So even this has precedent. Anyway.
Where do you find this stuff? And what do you read for leisure?
But see, the thing is, I mean, this thing came up in one of my feeds, and it said giant pothole may have saved a man's life. And you think, well, I've got to look at that. So I don't ordinarily read the TV station WOWT, their online feed, but I had to read this one.
So you go for the sensationalized stuff.
Oh, absolutely. That's what, how we. That's good radio right there, I tell you what.
As opposed to...
Well, last week, I think, you know, we got
our
talk
show
about
last week.
Yeah,
exactly.
The perils of pills. You know, I mean, we were trying to make the argument that your lifetime expenses on medicine should be capped at $70,000, which is actually still
a lifetime
more,
deductible.
Yeah, it's more money than you. But the thing about it is that not after that, it's not that I'm going to pay for your medicines. It's just that the drug company should not charge you more than $70,000 over your lifetime. Because that's more than you pay for food, and after all, you know, at some point there has to be some sensibility. Well, that was a really, really thick program, hard to digest.
Wasn't our fault.
Well, then, by golly, we followed that up with some potholes.
Some big potholes.
Life-saving potholes. That's the sort of thing that our listeners want to hear. And so there it is.
So let's give them some time to look for one.
Okay. Why don't you search out your pothole, friend, while we are taking a break. We're going to come back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Is It Hot on This Planet or Is It Just Me show. It is...
You know, I'm not going to say that anymore. You're a pothole.
Our sponsor for... I'm going to do this again.
You know, the thing is,
just
there
to
are
irritate
modern,
you.
Tony, there are modern calendaring tools that a five-year-old can use.
Okay.
I'm just going to leave that there.
Yeah, all right.
I'm just going to leave that there.
Let's get it out in the open because apparently this is just going to simmer. Shelley and I left for the studio tonight, and we were upset because we had gotten some bad news about a friend who had had a car crash, and that friend knows who that friend is, and we won't say any more about it. But
oh,
we
by the way,
upset.
Thanks for sharing that news with other said
okay.
person
and
of
so,
the radio
so
show.
We thought Rick was not coming tonight, and so we left. And then Rick comes I'll say stomping in like a giant pothole.
You could say pounding. They locked me out of this recording studio. No kidding.
Converting all of our out. Heart rhythms. And he comes in at the last minute, and now he blames me
for
that.
Two locked doors stood between me and this show.
Anyway, our sponsor for the second... second fracture portion, sleeping pills, and just to make you...
We're getting this on the record, Tony.
I'm going to do this.
We're getting this on the record.
Take sleeping pills tonight and sleep. Safe and restful sleep. Sleep. Sleep.
Didn't work. Didn't work. Did I or did I not send you a text message?
Rick sent me a text message saying he was coming. My phone was turned down low. I did not feel or hear the text message. I went on to the studio. I don't know what the big deal is, but apparently it's a big deal. We will talk about this over the potholes on the way home. Now, we were talking about insomnia drugs last time. They call it a black box warning, and that's exactly what it is. A large black box warning prescribers that these medicines can kill people. It's unfortunate, but your sleeping pill can kill you. Now, I'm going back again. I had a chance to look back over our show's archives. This was March 15, 2007. Now, 12 years ago, manufacturers of 13 sedative hypnotic drugs have been asked to strengthen the safety label warnings regarding adverse events associated with their use, according to the FDA. It was issued in December 2006. And it addresses the risk for engaging in activities while sleepy with no memory of having taken a pill. Sleep behaviors while taking these drugs can be complex and may include sleep driving, making phone calls, preparing and eating meals. Makers have been advised to conduct clinical investigations to assess how often these events occur. That was in 2007, 12 years ago, and I'm sure you've heard and read all the scientific information spewing out of the pharmaceutical industry regarding the dangers of these drugs. 2014, the insomnia drug Ambien, when it was introduced, doubled the number of emergency room visits related to sleeping medicine pills. New Drug Abuse Warning Network shows that there were 21,000 visits in the earlier time range versus 42,000 visits in the latter. That's between in 2005, before it was introduced, there were 21,000 ER visits related to insomnia medicines. In 2010, there were 42,000. So introducing that medicine, and it became very popular and very widely used, double the number of ER visits. And then in 2019, we are now adding a boxed warning. So the boxed warning is news. The problems with Ambien are not news. The problems with any medicine that renders you unconscious are not news. This is a problem, and it is anything but safe and restful sleep, even though that's the way the song went for the old Somnex many years ago when I was growing up. I still remember it on TV.
You know, the thing is, Tony, in my life, I've used Ambien a few times. It's pretty effective, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty effective stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, you say it does. You take it, and then you wake up the next morning. And so it does that. However, the problem is, you know, it renders you unable to defend yourself, unable to respond normally to whatever happens that night. And yeah, that's where the problem is.
But that's normal. That's normal for me. Any married man
Uh-oh.
Has that.
Rick's unconscious again. Well, that's probably what happened. That's why we did not link up before the show.
No. That was all on you, buddy.
You were probably in some kind of an unconscious state and not really responsible for your actions. Or maybe that was me.
I was trying to be respectful of the schedule.
All right, so this one, we start off with measles cases. I just wanted to talk about this. The number of confirmed measles cases up to 704 as of April 26th. Alex Azar, Secretary of Department of Health and Human Services, said vaccine-preventable diseases belong in the history books, not in our emergency rooms. And in fact, some of the news feeds are now reminding people like me who have never seen a case of measles because it was supposed to be eliminated what measles looks like because we are seeing it again. Among the confirmed cases, 571% occurred in unvaccinated individuals. 98% were U.S. residents, so this is not something that is being brought in from the outside. The most common way that is brought in is an unvaccinated person travels to an area where measles is still endemic, that is, it is still being actively transmitted, and brings it back into a community that does not have proper vaccination rates. And this is not about washing your hands. This is not about maintaining a safe distance. If I walk in the room and there are 10 people in the room, and if I have measles, 9 of those people will get the measles. This is an incredibly infectious virus. We have chosen, collectively, not to get that vaccine.
Why is that? I got it. You got it.
Well, you know, but the thing was, when we got it, you didn't question the medical doctors. You didn't question the science. They said, you need a vaccine. You said, okay, I don't like vaccines. I'll get a vaccine. Right now, the level of trust between the scientific community, whether it's climate change or whether it is vaccinations or things like that, things that in the scientific world and the scientific community we know either are happening or would be beneficial, those things are not... They're basically the advice of the scientific community about things that they have expertise on is no longer trusted. And, you know, I mean, I understand it because, again, you look at what the pharmaceutical industry's done with these sleeping pills. We have, in many cases, we have done things that, in my mind, are unethical. We have not informed people the truth about medicines or about our ability to treat diseases.
Isn't it that it's not that we've not shared the truth. It's been we've been almost, to some extent, too truthful. We've been so truthful people don't understand.
Well, you know, vaccination was the great health advance of the 1900s. The 20th century, there was one thing. We were able to control polio and measles and mumps and many of these vaccine-preventable diseases. This was the public health achievement. And I read this, and it just kind of hit me. Measles is going to be with us. We will have to relearn how to diagnose measles because even though we could eliminate it, we won't. Because we don't trust each other.
Is it that we don't trust each other or that we've become a very individualized nation? So, for instance, vaccinations help the many, and obviously there's a chance of a few not having the same positive effect, right? AKA, you can get sick. What we're saying is we've become so concerned about ourselves and being that one. You know, when they say the good of the many outweighs the good of the one, you know. Well, I mean, we actually kind of said no. The good of the one outweighs the good of the many. We flipped the way we think about this because we've become very individualized. I'm not necessarily saying that we don't trust people. I think we just think, well, I'm going to take my chances because I'm more important. I mean, it's more important to me that I don't get these side effects.
Right.
Or my child doesn't. Get, you know, I mean, I think there's a lot of a stigma about, what is it, there's a certain, what's the disease?
Oh, autism.
Yeah, yeah. Autism or...
and again, a condition.
Yeah, again, but so you start looking at this and you go, is this really just a manifestation of the way our culture has changed? Everything has become so individualized that my individual values are more important than collectively our values.
And since we were on the verge of eliminating measles,
risky.
There was no risk of measles, and so why get it? Again, if you saw what measles could do in the community, if you saw it, then you would say, well, I want to get vaccinated. But since you didn't, since you haven't seen it, you figure, well, the worst thing is the vaccine. Of the cases in 2019, 9% hospitalized, 3% had pneumonia. No one has died so far, no cases of encephalitis so far. But those are the two big concerns with measles back when it was frequent. But there will be people who got that. And especially now that children have transplants, children are being treated for rare tumors and so forth, but they're out in the community. It just takes one of those persons to get it that we can get in some big trouble. New York City, April 26th, issued civil summonses to 12 people who were not complying with a mandatory measles vaccination order. The state, again, this was New York's worst outbreak since 1991. They have 390 cases in New York City alone. Two of the 61 cases were in pregnant women, which is a threat to the unborn child. 12 people issued summons for defying the order. And they must attend a hearing and face fines of up to $1,000. They either have to get vaccinated or show that they have immunity with a blood test, and they chose neither. And so now the summons goes through the legal system, but the health department declares these quarantines and these mandatory vaccination orders, and the person must comply. And again, the we gave our health department that ability to fight outbreaks, and the legal authorities will go behind it and try to enforce those.
That's a slippery slope, though, isn't it?
It's tough because you don't know. I mean, if the health department orders you to do something that you don't believe in, you know, you feel, well, this is some kind of a police state. I have no freedom of choice here. I'm being coerced by the government to do something I don't want to do.
I mean, I get that's not a desirable, you know, state, actually. I mean, we don't want to have to use something to the concept of eminent domain on a human, right? It's just we shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah. Well, let me just put this one in to kind of I think you're Rick. This is exactly what the discussion I wanted to have, but this was April 18th. These things just kind of hit me. This was from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and I got this through Reuters. The Congolese President Felix Tshisekedi. This was the nation's worst ever Ebola outbreak. He implored people to accept that the disease is real and trust health workers. That is, people feel that it's not real, that maybe that it's the government is making something up. It is not an imaginary disease, he says, after arriving in the city of Beni on his first tour of eastern Congo. If we follow instructions, Ebola will be finished in 2 or 3 months. And he took his temperature, washed his hands, and showed them how to do that. Congo suffered 10 outbreaks of Ebola. The current one, 1,200 people, cases confirmed, 814 deaths since last August. Following a series of attacks on treatment centers by unidentified assailants, the outbreak is spreading at its fastest rate. In other words, they are actually actively attacking the people who are trying to treat the Ebola virus because they don't trust them. So once again, these viruses will be with us because we've lost that connection between the people who are doing the research and treatment and the people who are and the public, the relationship. And as Rick says, it's a variety of things. It is loss of community. We no longer think as a group. What is good for our nation? What is good? That's patriotism, and we can't have that. But we've withdrawn from our communities, and we have created then the ability for these diseases to flourish despite the fact that we could control it if we work together, and we can't work together. That the bottom line, however you get there, whether it's trust or whether it's self-centeredness or narcissism, we are not working together to combat these diseases, and that will people will die from that.
And that is extremely unfortunate.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's almost, it ranks right up there, frankly, with cigarette death, you know, lung cancer.
Yeah.
I mean, you can bring out all the numbers you want. You can cite all the risks you want. But ultimately, you're making a decision that from a science standpoint, not from an opinion, but from a science standpoint, really has a proven record of saving lives. And
yeah.
So when you choose to get off the social norm, then you know you're actually in this case endangering society. And I know those sound harsh. That word sounds harsh, but I mean, there's just no way around it. I mean, you and the rest of our lifetimes, we are going to see one of these diseases, or you know, one of these preventable things come back because of lack of vaccination.
Yeah, you know, and in the science fiction movies, and in the science, I used to love reading science fiction. That was never a future that I saw where we had the technology to do something, but we simply didn't do it. Bringing it closer to home, the hepatitis A outbreak in Kentucky. In 2016, 4,000 cases of hepatitis A in the entire United States. So far in Kentucky, 4,476 as of early April. Hmm. More cases in Kentucky than were in the entire United States in 2016, 53 deaths, more deaths than any other state with similar hepatitis A outbreaks. It is in the Kentucky's drug abuse population, particularly IV drug abusers. They have a lot of immune system weaknesses, and that's why the death rate is high. I was taught that hepatitis A was not particularly a deadly virus, but it certainly is in a person who uses IV drugs on a regular basis. The former the our former Department of Public Health infectious disease chief was a guy named Robert Brawley. He, when the outbreak first occurred, he said, we must declare a state of emergency and we must put money into this. The state decided not to declare a state of emergency and put about less than a third of what Brawley recommended. And there are now many people saying that our sluggish response, once again, we knew how to control this, but rather than a lack of trust, this was a lack of leadership. And our state then has had a prolonged hepatitis A outbreak with deaths that probably could have been prevented.
Yeah, but look at the population that it's affected, and how much money have we put into that population in trying to get them healthier, just generally. We don't have enough drug addiction treatment programs. We don't have the resources that those individuals need to find their way back to health. So why would we vaccinate them?
Yeah, well, in this case,
there's your
again,
trust issue again.
Yeah, the other states had a much more vigorous response. Maybe didn't have quite the population of IV drug abusers that Kentucky does, but still were able to contain their outbreaks. And no matter what you think of a person with IV drug abuse, this is an outbreak that transfers back and forth between non-drug users and drug users. You know, that's a reservoir, but if you allow that reservoir to persist, then eventually you have outbreaks in the population as a whole. And unfortunately, once again, people die. If we are not in it together, your point, Shelley, if we're not in it together, if we do not take care of the people who unfortunately have an addiction to drugs, then we ourselves will suffer directly from that, not just our loss of humanity. Lots of things to think about during this break, but we're going to come back one more time. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Is It Hot on This Planet or Is It Just Me show. I had a couple of things about climate change, but we got deeply immersed in all this silly health stuff, and so it doesn't look like we're going to get to that.
No, Tony, we got deeply immersed in potholes.
Giant potholes.
We are giant
life-saving
potholes. Our sponsor for the final time, Sleeping Pills, and I get to sing one more time. Take sleeping pills tonight and sleep. Safe and restful sleep. 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 All right, the FDA has added a box warning to insomnia drugs. We are talking about Lunesta, Sonata, and Ambien. Intermezzo and Edluar, which is the different strengths and sustained release of Ambien. Ambien, a very fast-acting medicine that is supposed to get you to sleep rapidly. But what if you wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning? Well, they've got a time-release form that will render you unconscious at that time and keep you unconscious all night long. FDA Acting Commissioner Ned Sharpless says, gee, we're having incidents where people are either suffering severe injury or death because they are doing activities without being aware that they're doing them. Sleepwalking, sleep driving, engaging in other activities outdoors in the wintertime, and they are not aware of what's going on. These incidents can occur after the first dose or after a longer period of treatment, can occur in patients without any history of these behaviors, even at the lowest recommended doses. And reminder, 46 reports of non-fatal injuries, accidental overdoses, falls, burns, near drowning, exposure to extreme cold temperatures leading to loss of limb, near death, self-injuries such as gunshot wounds, apparent suicide attempts, 20 deaths, carbon monoxide poisoning, drowning, fatal falls, hypothermia, fatal motor vehicle crashes with the patient driving, and apparent suicide, all of those things while under the influence of these medicines. And this has been, we've been talking about this now for over a decade. We know these medicines can do this, and I just want our radio fans to be aware. And this is, okay, 46 in a decade. Millions of people take these medicines. The day-to-day, night-to-night risk is small. You could say the same thing for a car. You know, a car, there is it gets you where you need to go most of the time. Sorry about that, Brian. But a car does carry a risk of you dying. The thing is, I think you know when you get in that car that that risk is there. You don't know what other kind of stupid people are going to be on the road, but you do know that. We want to make you aware that these sleeping pills are anything but safe and restful sleep. I mean, they do help. Rick says they work. You wake up in the morning and you have slept. And they clear out rather quickly, but not as fast as we would like. They still will impact your reaction time through the morning after you take them. So we're not recommending that you do anything that involves a great deal of deep thought or a lightning-fast reaction time the day after you take one of these. But that is the downside of them. The FDA finally has decided to put a black box on them because of the repeated, recurrent low level of serious side effects of sleeping pills. That's our sponsor, sleeping pills. To me, the thing is, the car does something good for you. And I understand that the sleeping pill makes you feel as if you've had a good night's sleep. But I don't know, you know, there is no life-saving properties of sleeping pills. There's not, you know, I don't know of anything with these sleeping pills that I can say, boy, we're doing this and this is a good thing.
Have they studied the brain waves of people who are asleep based on those pills? Is it completely, I'm just not sure the quality of sleep is what it should be.
Yeah, it's better than getting no sleep at all. Which I think most people are.
Right. That's the question. If you do this, are you better than if you got no sleep at all? I mean, you assume so. You feel, I mean, I think one thing we can say is it would make you feel better if you were unable to sleep. Now, they were FDA approved for short-term treatment of insomnia. They are not approved as a life change for insomnia. So in a setting, a funeral, a stressful time, episodically, that's what they were approved for. I have many patients that, frankly, again, they're habit-forming, take them every night, unfortunately. I do my best not to start anybody on them. I do not like these medicines. I would rather do just about anything. But your point, Rick, I don't know that. I don't know if they are not getting sleep is not healthy.
I think, you know, one of the things about this show that we've always tried to do is you know, it's about our personal experiences with certain things, right? I mean, granted, not every topic we talk about we have a personal experience with, but, you know, I think all of us have had sleepless nights. I think all of us have had stressful jobs. I think all of us have had, you know, there are times where there are certain things you just can't get off your mind, whether that be a death in the family, whether it be a family crisis, whether it be an event that's going on. You know, there are a million reasons why people can get to the point where their brain can't disengage and allow them to get good or even sleep at all. You know, and I've been in that boat. I've been there, and that's how I know about these drugs. And they are, in fact, effective. When you've been up for three straight nights and you actually take the time, now, where I may be a little detached from the current events is, you know, this requires you to go get a prescription from a doctor. So you have to actually go see somebody. And if you've been not sleeping well, say three, four nights in a row, and you go see a doctor and get something, and then that night you sleep like a baby. I mean, maybe you didn't sleep like a baby, but compared to the previous three nights, you certainly got better sleep, right? So, I mean, I think to some extent it is probably a little bit relative. You know, yeah. You take somebody who sleeps normally every night and give it to them, they're probably not going to sleep any better. They're probably just going to wake up groggy. Take somebody who can't sleep, and there you go.
Yeah, and I do not know the benefits. I can't tell you the benefits other than, you know,
no,
the fact that you.
But Tony, what you're saying is this is all the more reason to stick to the Health Matters call sign is, you know, ask your doctor. You know, this is a discussion you need to be having with your clinician because you may need this as a short-term solution and you don't want to, you know, get hooked to them long-term, obviously. And maybe there's another problem that needs to be fixed.
Well, I think that's the key for me with medications like that is, you know, it should be short term. If it's a long term situation, then maybe there needs to be some therapy or something else,
absolutely,
some underlying cause that needs to be dealt with. Don't just pop a pill every night that may, over time, lead you into some bad side effects.
I mean, you know, generally speaking, I think, you know, and I get that not everybody can do this, or that everybody has different issues, but you should try to get to a life that's, you know, for all practical purposes, drug-free, right? I mean, you want to try to live without having to take a daily regimen of pills.
Right. If you can solve something with your lifestyle or a drug, the lifestyle solution is always going to be a better solution. Again, if you're able to solve it. Now, in some cases, you can't solve it. Some people cannot, with any lifestyle measures, bring their blood pressure down. They may not be able to get their sugar where it needs to be. But if you can lose weight, exercise regularly, change your sleep and wake cycle, work on your sleep hygiene, those things are much better than simply taking a pill in place of that. Next up, this is from the Indianapolis Star, April 29, 2019, and it's the title is "In Anywhere But Indiana, Why Employers Are Avoiding Hospitals in the Hoosier State." And they first, they quote Gloria Sagdev, who's the president and CEO of Employers Forum of Indiana. She talks to employers about coming to Indiana. And there was an automobile executive talking with her. He said, "We have plants all over the country, and whenever we're talking about opening a new plant, you know what I say? I say anywhere but Indiana. On the average, we pay $2,200 for every worker's ER visit in Indiana. In Michigan, it's $800 average. That's the difference of a profit margin on one car just for a single ER visit." There was a study by Chapin White, who is a senior policy researcher and faculty member at the graduate school in Santa Monica, California, looking at what employers pay for health care in Indiana versus what Medicare pays. And he found that the employers paid in 2015 277% of what Medicare paid for health care for their employees. And that 2 years later was up to 295% of what Medicare paid. Now, you might say to yourself, well, why am I so worried about Indiana? Why would I bring something about Indiana? Couple of things. You know, they mention Michigan as their reference state. And with the automobile manufacturers in Michigan, they have worked very hard and very aggressively to try to keep their healthcare prices down. They have said, look, we are using this hospital. We are using this service. We are not using that service. And then we negotiate and try to bring the prices down for that service so that our employees can benefit and we can still make a profit making cars. In Indiana, they have what's called open networks. They prefer that. Parts of Indiana are sparsely populated. And so they said, look, we don't want to be tied to one hospital or one doctor. We want to be able to go where we want to. And that's going to be more expensive because you can't negotiate with everybody. The interesting thing about it then, Michigan was 149% of Medicare, and among the states that Chapin and his group in Santa Monica looked at, that was the lowest. Kentucky was the second lowest at 174% of Medicare. Now, we don't have a lot of heavy industry in Kentucky. I'm not sure. There could be a variety of reasons why we are cheaper than other states, but we are second to Michigan, and Michigan is very heavily influenced by the fact the automobile industry has driven those prices down. Illinois, 216% of Medicare, Ohio, 233%, Wisconsin, 279%, and Indiana topping out the list of states that were researched for this project at 295% of Medicare, meaning if Medicare pays a dollar for a person, they're going to pay $2.95 for the same service for one of their employees. So if you're a business trying to locate somewhere, Michigan's going to have lower health care costs, Kentucky's going to have lower health care costs, Wisconsin, Indiana are going to have higher health care costs. And why are they doing that, and how does that affect industry? Obviously, industry is not flocking to Kentucky. We have additional problems with an educated, drug-free workforce. We can't seem to produce that. But our health care is cheap.
We're still struggling with infrastructure, too, Tony. I think Kentucky struggles with enough modern fiber optics to provide the kind of data services that some companies need.
Right. So the automobile industry now, then.
It's getting a lot better, though.
We're working on it.
It's come a long way in the last 5 years. It really has. People may not want to give the political landscape, any kind of credit, but both of the previous two administrations have taken good steps to fix the infrastructure in Kentucky.
Yeah, so you're talking about a Democratic administration and a Republican administration.
Right.
Now, again, not necessarily agreeing with everything that they did, but everybody sure realizes how important this is, and they're with different approaches, they're all trying to attack it.
And there was an awful lot of commotion over the state CIO, right?
Yes.
A lot of commotion. But when was the last time you paid – when was the last time you did anything associated with state government online? Our state is behind technologically, and if it takes a good CIO to get that done, hey, I'm all in favor.
Chief Information Officer. Again, that is the person that's in charge of the state's web presence.
Exactly. How do you renew your car tags? How do you pay your property taxes? How do you request a form? You know, I mean, none of that stuff's digital these days, and or at least they're slowly trying to get there. But Kentucky does that, then becomes a digital state. Couple that with better infrastructure, changes that story, Tony.
And here's let me just add a little bit to this. And so the automobile manufacturers have been working really hard in Michigan to keep the prices down. Walmart is working in Arkansas. And this is Lisa Woods, who's the senior director of youth of U.S. Healthcare at Walmart. Her first message, she went to the annual World Health Care Congress in Washington, D.C. And her first message to those attendees, she said, "Before I talk about anything, I want you to go home and take down your billboards that advertise ER wait times." Walmart, in their area of Arkansas, has succeeded in eliminating those wait time billboards.
Because there is no wait time?
Well, no, because quite simply, you should not base your ER visit, your emergency room visit, on the wait time. This is not a walk-in clinic. This is not for something routine.
Do you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely.
Because, I mean, in our community, there's this, in most rural communities, at some point the ER does become a walk-in clinic.
I understand.
You can't help it.
I understand in the middle of the night, but in prime time, when other resources are available, and when those other resources should be, you should be using those, you should be supporting those, the idea of an ER saying, "Oh, we can see you in 5 minutes for an illness that is not an emergency," is wrong, and she feels it's wrong. The other thing that Walmart is doing is something called Centers of Excellence. A couple of things they mentioned. Walmart, when they had the Mayo Clinic as their Center of Excellence for Cancer, they found that more than 10% of people from outside of the Rochester, Minnesota area who traveled there found out they did not have cancer. They were diagnosed with cancer. 10% of them actually did not have cancer, had some other diagnosis. 55% had a different treatment plan. 54% of Walmart associates were told they needed spine surgery locally, and they went to a center of excellence and found that they could avoid it. Now, spine surgery, there are different thresholds for that across the country, but a center of excellence told these people, no, you really don't need to have spine surgery. So Walmart and the automobile manufacturers are aggressively looking for islands of rationality and cost-effectiveness in our healthcare system. And they are that. They are islands. The majority of the healthcare system is overbloated, overpriced, and is sadly misfocused. Now, you can say this is an old man. I am an old man, and this is me just ranting. I will say that the life expectancy in Eastern Kentucky, as we have added more healthcare facilities, MRI scanners, as we have done interventions for heart disease, bypass surgeries, as we have gotten better and better, lasers, robotics, all that stuff, since 1980, our life expectancy in Eastern Kentucky has steadily declined. Now, you can say, well, there's overdoses, and that takes out a young person. It has a disproportionate impact on life expectancy. Okay, I'll give you that. Well, then we need to be treating the overdoses, as Shelley said. If this is what's killing our young people, we need to focus our attention on that, and sadly, we haven't. And so now corporations are looking for a moment of sanity, I guess, an island of excellence, rather than trusting our healthcare system. And I remember when I started, it was undoubted, it was absolutely unequivocal that the United States, we said, had the best healthcare system in the world at the time. I don't think anybody thinks that anymore, and that's despite the fact we've put more money into that than we have anything else over the past 10 years. I'm very disappointed. So that's my big rant for today, and it's time to go off the air.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Shamari Mosley, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org, or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember this important safety information.
Health Matters is a prescription radio show for the short-term treatment of adults who have trouble falling asleep.
Do not listen to more Health Matters than prescribed. Do not take Health Matters or Health Matters CR unless you are able to stay in bed a full night, that is 7 to 8 hours, before you must be active again.
Health Matters and Health Matters CR may cause serious side effects that you may not know are happening to you. These side effects include
sleepwalking or doing other activities when you're asleep, like eating, talking, having sex, or driving a car.
Sleepiness during the day.
Not thinking clearly.
Acting strangely confused or upset.
Call your doctor right away if you find out that you have done any of these activities after listening to Health Matters.
If you hear too much Health Matters or overdose, get emergency treatment.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down.
And do it with your eyes open.
Get out this week. Make a healthy change in your life. And tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.